Welcome to Between the Rows, where you get to hear the stories behind the stories in Canada's leading farm publications.
Hello, and welcome to Between the Rows. I'm Ed White, your host this week. Today, we're going to hear a timely reminder about grain bin safety as farmers get ready for harvest. We'll look at where the Threshermen's Reunion finds its hundreds of dedicated volunteers. But first, let's think about soil health concerns on the other side of the world, in East Africa. Soil health is a big issue in Canada, but it's also a global issue with economic and food security impacts everywhere. In late July, the Canadian Food Grains Bank hosted a global forum on soil stewardship. As part of that, faith-based organizations focus on helping farmers in developing nations improve their abilities to feed their people. The forum brought agronomists from Kenya and Ethiopia together with Canadian farmers and agronomists to talk about conservation agriculture. Manitoba Cooperator reporter Geraldine Witchers was there, and she joins us to fill us in on the event. Hello, Geraldine, and welcome to Between the Rows.
Hi there.
So, Geraldine, give us a refresher on the basics of conservation agriculture.
Yeah, so it's basically three principles. The first one is minimal soil disturbance, or no-till, low-till. And then there's soil cover, which in Kenya and Ethiopia is generally done with mulch. And then diversified crop rotation and intercropping. And what that does is this cuts down on the water that's lost from the soil. Of course, these are rather arid climates. And it also cuts down on wind and water erosion of the soil, and also contributes to soil fertility. And this is something that's done in North America, of course, but the Canadian Food Grains Bank focuses on East Africa, Kenya, and Ethiopia.
Is there much interest in conservation agriculture in East Africa?
Well, I don't know the full extent of it, but I know there was six agronomists, three from Kenya and three from Ethiopia, who came to the conference. And collectively, they worked with thousands, if not tens of thousands of farmers. The one agronomist I spoke to, Regina Kamau, she works with 6,000 farmers alone. So there does seem to be a fair bit of interest, for sure.
Why are they interested in it?
It's fairly simple. The farms that they have generally don't produce enough to feed their families. The land is degraded. It doesn't produce very well. And so when they see other people who are using these practices and getting better yields, it just sort of makes sense that they should give it a try themselves.
So what difference is it making?
Well, I talked to John Mbai from Kenya. He coordinates conservation agriculture work across the country, and he had something to say about that.
And in the 4 years that you've been with Food Grains Bank, what difference have you seen conservation agriculture make for the people you work with?
In the country, in Kenya, and even in East Africa as a whole, with the whole program, what has been happening, the areas that we are working in, they are not high potential areas. These are very very low potential areas. And farmers have been, productivity in these areas have been very low. Like for maize, if I can give the most common for corn, for maize, for production, farmers would get like 400 kilos.
In an acre.
Where currently farmers are getting more than 1,500 kilos per acre currently.
Yeah.
With the conservation agriculture.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, in most counties, because we usually get the not national but county average production per acre, currently most counties stands at 400 kilos.
Okay.
Therefore, I think for conservation agriculture, farmers can be able to double that and even more than double what they were producing before.
What's interesting is beyond providing better food security, it's also giving women more power in their own households and lives. A lot of the farmers are women, and John explained to me a little bit about that.
For me, what I have seen maybe in Africa context for this program was on gender issues.
Mm.
Gender has been a major issue, especially on decision making in Africa.
Yes.
Because women don't have power so to make decisions on the farm. What can I grow, where can I grow specifically, but they are given instructions by their spouses.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, for this program, what we have seen so far, the 4 years that we have been working was because of the good results from farmers implementing CA,
mm-hmm.
In fact, they are, now their spouses are now seeing the this is working. Therefore, they are feeling more comfortable now, even releasing powers to their spouses, yeah. to their wives. Then their wives can be able to make decisions that this is a major, major breakthrough, mm-hmm. which has never happened before.
So, Geraldine, from talking to the African agronomists, why is this an important issue for them?
Well, here in Canada, when we have degraded soil, we can make up for that somewhat by applying fertilizers and so forth. But for these really small-scale farmers who are farming a couple of acres, it's something different entirely. I spoke to an agronomist from Saskatchewan, Jocelyn Velistuk, and she had something to say about what she had heard at the conference.
Well, the highlight for me is this is a different type of event that I'm used to attending on, you know, the latest research or even the latest techniques or the latest management. It's really bringing a whole nother perspective to it with the African agronomists here. They make the point that conservation ag is necessary for people to eat and for survival where they live. And with us, you know, implementing conservation ag, regenerative ag, whatever you call it here, it's important for sustainability and for making sure we can farm in the future, but it's from a different perspective. And also they're bringing the spirituality into it as well, which is quite different from other events, which just speak on maybe scientific or the maybe actual doing of the work, but not maybe the well-being of the people doing the work.
So what did you think about the conference?
It was really interesting. I went in knowing very little about it. So for me, there was a lot to learn. What struck me about what the African agronomists had to say was that for them, this was a lot about returning to traditional practices. Regina Kamau told me that when they would bring together the younger farmers and the much older farmers, and they would say to the older farmers, how did you farm when you were young? They would essentially talk about conservation agriculture practices. And it did get me to thinking about what changes we might be better off making here in Canada as well.
Well, thanks very much for stopping by, Geraldine.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Geraldine Witchers is a reporter with the Manitoba Cooperator. Harvest is an exciting time. It's also a dangerous time. As farmers prepare their bins for the new crop, they face the dangers of a fall. At the Ag Emotion Outdoor Farm Show in July, farmers got a chance to see the Bin Safe Fall Protection System, which was developed by a Saskatchewan outfit called Northern Strands. Glacier Farm Media's Laura Rance met with sales and marketing manager Jesse Cope about how the system is catching on.
Even falling from a short distance can seriously injure yourself, but falling from the really tall grain bins, like, you know, there's a very good chance that you could actually die from falling off a grain bin these days just because of the height of it. And in the past, there were cages, but people would actually get caught in those cages. So, you know, our product, BinSafe, is a true grain bin fall protection system, an engineered system that allows them to safely climb their bins. And also, you're still tied off on the top of the bin, too, even when you need to open that lid and look in there.
What exactly is the product that you've got here?
Yeah, so what it is it's an anchor point that you anchor at the top of your bin. So we have a different anchor for, say, corrugated and a different one for your smooth walls. So we've engineered and developed this. So it's an easy install on the top of your bin, about a half hour, 45 minutes. And then there's a wire rope that runs from that anchor down the side of your ladder and ties off the bottom. And then we have what's called a rope grab or a traveler. And that basically allows you, it slides up and down the rope as you climb. So you basically use a hand to basically move it up and down the rope. So, but if you fall, it only moves in an upward position. So if you fall, it automatically locks. So, and it rests your fall. So your lanyard will expel and absorb a lot of that initial force from the fall, and then you'll hopefully will have no serious injuries.
Does every bin have this equipment on it then? When people invest in this, they put it on every bin, or is it something that moves from bin to bin?
There's the bin kit itself, which is the anchor the rope and the hardware with it. You have that on every bin, but the rope grab, you actually move from bin to bin. So we call that the user kit. So the user kit is the rope grab, the lanyard, and the harness. So that's a one-time purchase, and then you can use that for all your bins on the farm. So, but every bin needs an anchor and a rope permanently attached to it.
So what makes this product unique when it comes to safety with grain bins?
Well, up until now, there was no true fall protection, so there actually was nothing. So we were the first to develop it. So, and it's interesting because in the States now, they've now ruled that cages don't count as fall protection, and manufacturers are supposed to offer a system with their bins. So we've been in contact with a lot of the bigger manufacturers and have dealers now and so on. But yeah, it really, there was nothing. So if you're a farmer and, you know, it was good on you if you had a cage, but, you know, a lot of the time the cage actually can seriously injure you because you get caught in there and you kind of ping pong back and forth as you go down. Even our health and safety manager mentioned a case where he had to see somebody actually get cut out of the cage because they were so tangled up in it. So our system, you know, it arrests your fall. It's a true fall protection system, whereas there's really no other one out there for grain bins. So we're very happy to know that someday, you know, when somebody does slip, that, you know, our system will prevent serious injuries or death.
So where did you get the idea from?
Really, we just found there was a need in the marketplace. You know, like it was, you know, we looked into it many years ago, and then we kind of shelved it. Then we looked into it again, and we just saw this big opening need for it. And we just started doing a little bit of research, and we actually realized that falls off grain bins is actually the most common accident on a farm. So we thought it was kind of crazy that nobody had developed it.
I'm just wondering what kind of uptake you've seen from the farming community for this.
Yeah, no, it's changed. Like, even just in the last, you know, year and a half, 2 years, you know, we got a lot of, I would say, pushback from farmers. Oh, they were saying, oh, I'm not going to use it unless I'm forced to use it, like unless the government mandates it. And actually, in a lot of areas, it is mandated. They just don't do it, right? But now, you know, we've had almost none of that at this trade show, for example. It's actually more, hey, this is a great product. You know, I'm going to get this.
I think, too, a lot of farmers, it's not just themselves or their family members. It's actually they have employees. And then there's workplace safety and health provisions in some provinces now that would require some kind of safety system.
Yeah, you're 100% right. So in family farms, yeah, the rules are a little bit different, right, in some cases, but there's huge liability issues. And some of our biggest customers so far are the huge farms out there that have a number of employees. I've even had farmers come up and say, yeah, actually, I did have, you know, a farmer, and one of my employees fall off, and it didn't end well, like, and really, I wish this system would have existed years ago, because we definitely could have used it, with, you know, at the time, I would have purchased it, you know, but there wasn't anything, really. So yeah, it's definitely, there's a lot of interest, and you know, shift, especially like you said, the liability is a big concern for corporate farms. And actually in Alberta, they have a 50% grant that they're offering for if you have a full-time employee, you can get 50% off of safety equipment in Alberta right now. So we hope other provinces will actually follow suit, like Saskatchewan and so on, and some of the provinces that have a lot of agriculture and farms.
What's the price point on this?
It's very inexpensive. Like, it ranges from $165 to $195. That it's very affordable. Like, honestly, like, any farmer can afford it. You know, you compare it to the price of cages and staircases, which are thousands of dollars, right? So, honestly, sometimes they're surprised at how inexpensive it is. So, and the user kit is a little bit more. It's $390, but it's a one-time purchase, right? So, you don't need it on every bin.
What's the next step for this product then?
So the next step is, so we've expanding a dealer network. So, you know, really we would love to have just a complete network set up. So we're a fall protection company, but we're not traditionally in the agriculture industry. So, and then also going more international. So we just recently started selling into the US. So we want to, you know, pursue that. And also we want to start getting all these bin manufacturers to put it on their bin and when they're a time of manufacturer. So when they're selling the bin, it comes with it, right? So, and we're in talks with a number of different manufacturers in that regard. But there is, you know, hundreds of thousands or maybe millions of bins out there that could use our system right now. So yeah, it's about taking it international is, I guess, the next step.
Do the people behind this product, like, do you have an agricultural background?
No, we don't, actually. So we have a fall protection background, right? So it's just like we're a fall protection company and thought, well, here's something we can make, right? And
so you work in other industries?
Yeah,
as well?
we're traditionally a mining and construction company. So we're B2B, and we're mainly selling to construction companies and doing service work with them.
So how does the culture between construction and agriculture, what's the difference when you're talking to farmers about something like this and talking to someone in mining and construction?
Yeah, that's a good question. So we do mining trade shows also, and there is a pretty big difference. Like, you know, it's they don't have a choice. So they have to have safety products, right? Where in this, it's kind of like they have to make a decision on what they want to do, right? So it's more personal in the agriculture industry, construction and mining. Like, there's safety rules. And it's not about if they're going to have safety products, it's just about who's going to provide them.
But as you said, the culture in farming is starting to change.
Definitely, definitely. Like, there was probably a big gap there a few years ago, but it's amazing how fast we're seeing that change. Like, definitely farmers are more safety conscious and becoming more safety conscious. And especially, I think, some of the younger farmers who maybe have worked in other industries. Like, you know, I have a number of farmers like, oh, yeah, I used to work construction when I was younger. Now I took over the farm. So I'm used to wearing harnesses. And I now I think it's crazy that I'm climbing bins, and I did it when I was younger and I didn't have a harness on, you know, like there. So I think they're definitely appreciating that they need to have these things in place for sure.
That was Laura Rance of Glacier Farm Media talking with Jesse Cope of Northern Strands. I'm Ed White, and this is Between the Rows. Well, the annual Threshermen's Reunion and Stampede just wrapped up. And it, as always, saw thousands of attendees witnessing the efforts of hundreds of volunteers. But where does the Threshermen's find its army of volunteers in a sparsely populated area? In the days before the event, I went out to Austin, Manitoba, and met with a bunch. I wrote a feature on it for the August 1st Western Producer. This is what I concluded. The volunteers come from a long way away, often. I met, when I was out there, people from Winnipeg, from Brandon, from Portage la Prairie, that are there throughout the year. They don't just come out for the event. They are there for the weeks and months leading up to the show. And as one of the organizers told me, a large proportion of their volunteers come from more than an hour away. So there's a lot of community involved with the people that volunteer at the show. Most of these people have family farm backgrounds. Almost everybody I met has some family farm in the background that attaches them to memories that the show brings up. However, almost everybody I met have not spent their lives as full-time farmers. A lot of these people were tradespeople who've gone to cities and towns and worked in various trades like carpentry, mechanics, or as millwrights. And they're attached to agricultural machinery more really than agricultural production, perhaps. These people really like working with metal, with rubber, with paint. They really like getting dirty while they are working and having fun. It's all the same thing to a lot of these people. These are not the kind of people who want to go away to a cabin or to the beach on the weekends. When they're done work, they jump in their car, they drive to the museum, and they spend the weekend working on old, stubborn machinery. A lot of these people, while we think of the Threshermen's as a very noisy and vibrant event, this year there were 12,000 people in attendance and 650 volunteers, so it's a big thing and a lot of action. But what attracts a lot of these people to the show, I found out from talking to a few of them, was they like in the weeks beforehand, the months beforehand, it's a very quiet, relaxed atmosphere. Most of them are working on their own things. Maybe they're working on an old tractor by themselves or with a partner, and they'll work on that by themselves without a lot of interaction with all sorts of other people. This is something where people can sort of follow their own interests in their kind of part of the show, whether that's working on an engine or working on the carpentry of a wagon or on painting. There is a couple that had been coming out this year, and they painted 57 benches. They sanded them down and painted them. So it's kind of a place that attracts people who are self-starters and who just like to commit to something and to take on a task and do it. And that's their idea of relaxation. So congratulations to the Threshermen's Reunion on its 65th anniversary. And if you're interested in reading a bit more about these people and seeing a couple of pictures of them, you can check out my feature in the August 1st Western Producer. Now, Glenn Halleck of Markets Farm joins us to talk about the markets. Hi, Glenn, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Ed.
So, Glenn, it feels like we're really in the doldrums here. What is going on with the markets?
Well, right now, everything is in a consolidation pattern. There's really nothing major to push bids either way, up or down. Everything is hinging on this one August 12th report from the USDA that's going to show how many soybean acres, how many corn acres, and how many prevent plant acres U.S. farmers have. Because the numbers in the previous report were kind of skewed because the surveys weren't done. Now the surveys are going to be done, and the markets will have a much clearer picture of what's going to happen for the rest of the summer.
And early on, there were a huge number of questions hanging over North American crops due to a whole range of conditions, but a lot of anxieties. Are all those anxieties evaporating?
For the most part, yes. You know, we had a very, very dry spring here on the prairies. You know, with the rainfall we've had, crops have improved vastly. Unfortunately, that also means prices have come down a little. In the U.S., things were just wet. It was like flood after flood, rainstorm after rainstorm. Now things are drying out. Prices in the U.S. have come down a little.
So I guess the problem there is a weather rally can really go away when the weather
Now,
gets better.
There still is a bit of a weather premium on a canola, but that's dissipating for the most part.
I remember back in 2012, that really exciting year for the grain markets when there was that incredible rally because of the Midwest drought. I watched that drought go on and on. And what was interesting was I'd spoken to a couple of longtime grain market analysts and asking them, how do these things tend to work out? If the drought goes on, do things keep going up and up and up? And what both of the ones that I remember talking to told me was no, by early to mid-August, even if conditions are getting worse, the rally tends to fade and falls into the fall as buyers ration demand and the market gets used to not expecting much of a crop to be there. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, as that evolved, that's what happened. It was really interesting to see. Things got worse, but prices came down and just slowly sold off. And there was a kind of a different situation to this one where there was a continuing drought, but the rally began to fade away. And this year, I guess what we've got is better weather and the rally's gone away too.
Yes, it has.
Now, we've still got the China-US trade war going on. What could that do? I mean, every day there's something on this. Donald Trump tweets something or China says something. What kind of an impact could this have on us going forward?
Well, what we're seeing right now is they had their second round of talks in Shanghai today. Trump comes out with a tweet saying China's not buying enough U.S. Agricultural products, and prices start going down. The reports are saying that the U.S. and China are probably as far apart as they ever been. It would basically take a miracle for them to reach a deal. President Trump is saying there won't be a deal until after the November 2020 presidential election. But if there is a deal, prices will bounce up or even have a good strong rally.
And with the upcoming USDA report on August 12th, what are you most interested in discovering and what are the markets waiting for clarity on?
Well, they're waiting to see that switch that U.S. farmers made from corn to planting soybeans. Soybeans obviously grow a lot quicker than corn. You know, fields were so wet. We're going to see, well, not exactly, but pretty close to how many soybean acres there are. And we'll see how that plays out in the market.
Well, thanks very much for popping by today, Glenn.
Yeah, thanks, Ed.
Glenn Halleck is a reporter with Markets Farm. That's all for this week. Please join us again next week for another edition of Between the Rows. I'm Ed White.
Between the Rows is a production of Glacier Farm Media, Canada's leading farm publisher. We'd love to hear what you think of the show and invite you to send your comments to btr@farmmedia.com or visit us at membersgetmore.ca and sign up today.